This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Our hour of old-time radio begins this week with The Adventures of Frank Race, an episode from July 17th, 1949, titled The Silent Heart. And it's a quick Incredible But True with The Temple of Beale. We'll finish off with The Chase and Fortune Hunter, an episode from January 4th, 1953.
The Adventures of Frank Race, starring Tom Collins. The war changed many things, the face of the earth and the people on it. Before the war, Frank Race worked as an attorney, but he traded his law books for the cloak and dagger of the OSS. And when it was over, his former life was over, too. Adventure had become his business. The Adventures of Frank Race. Frank Race for The Adventure of the Silent Heart.
It was hot in New York. One of those summer days when the newspaper sent cameramen on the prowl for some citizen sufficiently touched with the sun to try frying an egg on the sidewalk. At the moment, I felt like the egg. But coming out of the furnace blast of the street into the air-cooled offices of Trans-Columbia Life Plan, it was like passing from this vale of tears into some unexpected Valhalla.
Oh, ain't this something? Say, are all offices like this, Race? No wonder secretaries look so fresh at 5 o'clock.
From the reports, you look pretty fresh to secretaries, too, Mark. At all hours.
Stop with the clown. Look, who is this guy that you're going to see?
Fred Jeremy. There's his name right there in the door.
Well, why don't I go in with you? Maybe the guy's got something cool in a glass to go with the cool air.
He probably wants to see me alone, Mark.
Can I help you?
My name's Race. I'd like to see Mr. Jeremy.
Oh, go right in, Mr. Race. You're expected.
Race? I think I'll wait out here after all.
Mark, someday they'll pass a law making cab drivers wear blinkers. It'll be rough on you, boy. Rough.
Take your time, in there.
I will. You take your time out here.
Hey, look, baby, I know a place where there was a three-piece band at...
I hate dancing.
Now, Mark.
Yeah?
You try not to freeze to death while I'm gone, huh? Fred Jeremy. Thick-lensed glasses and high forehead. He had the look of the kid who sat next to you in school, the one who turned in his arithmetic paper 20 minutes before you finished yours. At the moment, his eyes were glued in some charts hanging on the wall.
Know anything about graphs, Race? Take a look at these. Statistics on angina pectoris, heart disease. This one represents the national average of deaths due to heart ailments.
Oh, that's pretty high.
It is, Race. It's a big killer.
And what's the other chart?
That represents one county in our New England district.
Same disease?
Yes, Race, the same disease. But notice the sharp upswing in deaths during the past year.
Almost doubled the national average.
Yes. Of course, it could be a coincidence.
But you don't think so?
Obviously not, or I wouldn't have sent for you. Race? I think there's a murder ring operating in that county.
Any special pattern that the claims follow?
Yes. The majority of the claims have been paid to business partners. Look at this latest one. The deceased, Richard Dodge, was insured for $50,000 by the financing partner, Arthur Becker.
Mm-hmm.
But Becker's original investment in the business was only $8,000.
I'd like to have a copy of that.
Yeah, there's one in this folder, along with a list of other cases that are suspiciously similar. Race, the town of Midville is situated on a lake right near the center of that county. It's rather popular as a vacation resort. You could use a vacation, couldn't you?
I'll leave tonight. I'll let you know where I'm staying.
Oh, brother, what a layout. Now, this is living, right? And did you see those gorgeous chicks down by the lake? I am going to like you, Dee.
Yeah, be careful of your heart, Mark. This place is becoming noted for angina pectoris.
Yeah? You know anybody who can introduce us to the thing?
Well, this is one you wouldn't enjoy meeting. Come on, let's climb into some swim trunks. Huh?
That is exactly what I had in mind.
Come in.
Mr. Rafe?
That's right.
My name is Arthur Becker.
He's a fat man. But the way he carried himself told me that muscles were hidden under those layers of flesh. Muscles that would respond viciously if ever he was cornered. His eyes were those of a hunter. Light blue and cold. Very cold. Too cold for this to be vacation.
My business partner, Richard Dodge, passed away a short time ago. I had him insured to protect my investment. I understand you're investigating the claim.
Who sells you your information, Becker?
This is a small town, Race. You sent a wire reporting your arrival to the insurance company. The boy who took the wire has rather a poor sense of ethics. He reads things.
What do you want, Becker?
What do you want, Race? I might help you to find it quickly and save us both a lot of time.
You insured Richard Dodge for $50,000, but you only invested $8,000 in the garage. It doesn't add up.
I like Dodge. He was a competent mechanic with a good reputation.
And according to the medical report when the insurance examination was made, he was a very healthy mechanic with a very good heart.
People have been known to take sick quite suddenly.
Yeah, well, this is a bit too convenient, especially with the money involved.
Well, I can see you haven't a very trusting nature, Race. I thought I might be helpful. After all, none of us know when the old pump might give out, Race. Could happen to anybody. It might even happen to you.
In checking around Midville, I found that Richard Dodge, the latest victim of the heart disease racket, had a mother. I went to see her.
I can't understand what happened to my boy, Mr. Ray. He was so big and strong. He played football when he was in high school, you know.
Did he have any insurance? Any payable to you, I mean?
Well, he did before he went into the business with Mr. Becker. But then Richard increased his old policy and made it over to Becker so that the premiums wouldn't cost too much.
You mean Richard paid the premiums himself?
No, I paid them. I had a little money left over from my husband's pension.
I see.
I have some pictures of my son in his football uniform and when he was a soldier. Would you like to see them, Mr. Reed?
No, I'd... Yes. Yes, Mrs. Dodge. I'd like to see them. There are some pictures you can't erase from your mind. Richard Dodge had been tall and straight, clean-looking. Now there was nothing left of the little old lady who'd prayed him safely through a war, only to see him die without reason. I walked back to the hotel.
Well, hey, it's about time you got back. It's been a dame looking for you. She said there was something you didn't know, and she thought it might help you.
It must be this week's target for good deeds. Everybody wants to help me. She leave a name?
Yeah. She said she was Mrs. Dodge. Did it mean anything?
Mrs. Dodge? I just left the old lady less than half an hour ago.
This dame was here a half hour ago. And, she ain't old. Not with that complexion. She said she'd go down and wait for you in a car. Parked at the end of the driveway. Blue convertible.
I better see her. Yeah, but I've got something for you to do, too. Here's a list of all the possible victims of the ring. Mm-hmm. They all died in this county. The county coroner's right here in Midville. Go over this list with him, will you, and find out if he performed an autopsy on any of them. And tell him I'll make a copy of his report in each case.
Oh, fine. I get all the nice jobs. All you gotta do is chase after the dolls, but lucky me.
I drawed a copy coroner.
Well, get going, Boyd. He may be beautiful. The blue convertible was at the end of the driveway, all right. The girl behind the wheel steered to the highway. I saw her face in the last glow of the sun. Lovely. Lovely enough to make me forget for a moment why I was here. Finally, she turned into a small country lane and stopped.
Got a cigarette?
Here.
Thanks. You didn't know Richard Dodge was married, did you?
That's something I still don't know.
We were married secretly more than a year ago.
I don't want to sound like a house detective, but I suppose you have the license.
No. Richard kept it.
Well, that was an odd choice. Most men keep the bride. Especially when she looks like you, Mrs. Dodge.
Call me Rain.
Rain. That's an unusual name.
Not really. It stands for Lorraine. When I was a child, it was too much to handle all at once.
Why did you bring me out here? Not just to tell me that Richard Dodge had a wife.
Our marriage was secret. I didn't know what would come out in your investigation.
You're safe. His insurance wasn't made out to you.
Richard and I never announced our marriage because I was sorry I ever got into it. It wasn't until later that he told me about his heart.
Told you what about his heart?
He was sick. He was always afraid that he was going to die.
The insurance examiner doesn't agree with him. Neither did the doctors in the United States Army.
They could be wrong, couldn't they, Ray? You believe me, don't you?
She leaned toward me and her eyes were blue in the dusk. Blue and smoky as a Harlem band at midnight. Her hair brushed the side of my face and her arms went around my neck. A man who gets kissed like that needs a strong heart.
I could go very fond of you, Ray. If you'd let me.
I shouldn't object, should I? After all, you recover quickly. The last man you were fond of has been dead almost 2 weeks.
I told you that Richard was a mistake.
Whoever killed him made a mistake, too.
You have no right to say he was killed, not unless you have some proof. Horace.
All right, Horace. Well, out of the car, get your hands up.
Horace, it's a holdup.
Save that for the Midville Little Theater, baby. You'll never make Broadway.
You keep your lip button, wise guy. Tell the dame to start the car and get out of here.
Why don't you tell her? You know her name as well as you knew mine.
Go ahead, sister. Beat it.
Night had fallen. She had to put her lights on to turn the car in the narrow road. My back was to her, and the lights hit the man with the gun square in the face.
I dove at him. I'm turning this gun into your stomach. Why don't you pull the trigger now?
Let me pull you.
Sure.
With this.
Oh, Race, I was so frightened.
Yeah, you're so sincere. Come on, drive me back to my hotel.
Well, what about Carson?
So his name's Carson. Thanks. Let's leave him there. The dew will bring him around.
Brother, what happened to you? You got lipstick on your mouth with the rest of you. What did she do, kiss you and then push you into a concrete niche?
Yeah, rival popped up. A fellow named Carson. How'd you make up with the coroner?
Fine. But kill the whole quart of elderberry wine. He makes it himself.
How about the death report?
He says it was all just plain heart failure. Said we was wasting our time.
You too, huh?
You know, some might think I'm going to turn in early. That wine has made me woozy. Probably have me a technicolor hangover. A few minutes ago, everything looked blue, and now everything looks yellow. Isn't that funny?
Yellow. What looks yellow, Mark?
Everything. It's funny. Everything.
Mark, light up, boy. You're right here in the couch.
Race. What's the matter with me?
Your order, please.
Tell room service to shoot off some ice and plenty of black coffee right away. And send the house doctor up. Hurry.
What is it? I feel...
Yeah, Mark, you got to be quiet, boy. I'm afraid you're going to have a heart attack. Got about a 50-50 chance to save your life.
We'll return to the adventures of Frank Race in just about 1 minute. back to the adventures of Frank Race.
I stayed at the hotel waiting for the doctor to get finished with Mark. It was touch and go. I knew he was having a rough time of it, but while he was conscious, he never lost that grin. Made me want to go out after Becker and his mom. You operate off cue when you get like that. I knew better. How is he, Doctor?
He's sleeping now. I think he'll come out of it all right. Coffee you poured into him probably saved his life.
I was right about the drug, then.
Yes. An overdose of digitalis. Administered orally. If he'd gotten a bit more of it, nothing would have helped. How did you spot it?
He had yellow vision. I know the color distortion's often the result of a heart depressant.
Yeah, it could be caused by something else. You made a good guess.
No, the nature of the case I'm working on eliminated guesswork in this instance.
I'll have to make out a report, naturally. Do you know who is responsible?
Not for sure, but I hope to before long. As soon as I've had a chance to sample some wine.
You'd better stick to water if the gentleman you have in mind spikes his wine with digitalis. Speaking of water, I think I'll try some.
Perhaps so. There's also some scotch over.
Yeah, thanks. This will do.
What's the matter, Doctor?
This water. I thought you said he was given the drug in wine.
You mean there's some in that water?
Enough to kill a mule, I'd say. I'd better have this analyzed.
Yes. I'd better start shopping around for a new suspect. For the next 12 hours, Mark slept like a log. I stayed close to him. The stuff he'd swallowed had obviously been meant for me. Made a few long-distance calls, including one to Fred Jeremy. He came up by plane, loaded with information.
Well, I checked for the police, Race. There's a lot of stuff. I hope you can make it fit.
How about Becker?
Well, there's a prison record, all right. He also has an alias. Sometimes calls himself Benjamin Delaney.
Benjamin Delaney? Well, that's the name of another of the beneficiaries on a policy you paid off a couple months ago.
That's right.
How about Carson? Able to run down anything on him?
He served time with Delaney. He's also out on parole.
Good. Now, how about Richard Dodge? Any record of his marriage?
Yes, he married a girl named Lorraine Gregory. A civil ceremony performed in the next county.
Lorraine Gregory? The county coroner's name's Gregory.
That's right, Race. She's the coroner's daughter.
But what were Becker and Carson convicted for?
Armed robbery.
Picked a less spectacular game, but one that's all even more lethal.
Race, in view of what happened to your friend, I think we could get the police to make an arrest.
No, not yet, Fred. Couldn't make it stick.
Why not?
Because we can't prove access to the drug. It's hard to obtain. I've had every source checked and all prescriptions searched. There's no way they could have gotten their hands on the quantities used. None that we could prove.
Hi, fellas.
Hey, Mark, come on now, get back in bed.
Not a chance. Don't you know more people die in bed than any place?
I'm sorry about what happened to you, Donovan. The company will try to make it up to you.
Oh, thanks. But I am interested in how you could have made it up to me if I drank just a little more of this.
I guess you're getting better, all right.
I have been slip nickies before, you know. But this one was meant to be permanent. I would like to get my hands on the gent who's prepared it.
I hope you'll get that chance. I'm going out.
But there's another dame in this.
Yes and no. I'm in the mood for a little elderberry wine. I'm going to visit Coroner Gregory and his daughter. Yourself. Your father home?
Come to answer my hand, please.
When I ask for your hand, baby, I'll be carrying handcuffs in mine.
He's out there, Rain.
A man named Race. He wants to see father.
Well, bring him in, girl.
Enter, Mr. Race. Mother, Dad, this is Mr. Race.
I'd like to talk to the coroner officially and alone.
Well, I can always wash my hair. But you'll find that Mother and Dad are hard to...
You may leave us, Margaret.
I'll stay right here. You had too much wine to be left by yourself.
You mean he might say things I shouldn't hear?
What I mean is my business.
Gregory, you almost had another heart failure case in your hands. A friend of mine.
That's so.
If he had died, your report might have been interesting. I wonder what it would have said.
Since he ain't dead, there's no way of telling.
I think you'd have passed it off as a natural death, just as you have in so many other cases.
Heart trouble is a common disease.
Yes, but not when it's caused by digitalis. Why didn't you do an autopsy on Richard Dodge?
I know how to run my job.
It might not be your job for much longer. I'm going to ask the state's attorney to appoint a grand jury to investigate these deaths.
Go ahead. You ain't getting me out of this job. Margaret will see to that, won't you?
Shut up.
Why should I? These city fellas are so smart. We don't like outsiders around here, mister.
You can't like your own people too well, either. They're dying off too easily. On that cue, I left. I'd uncovered one small point. Wherever Gregory's local political strength came from, it came through his wife. I checked around and found that he'd held some minor political office or other for years. But the key was Margaret Gregory. And it wasn't long before I could fit her into the jigsaw. I went back to Fred Jeremy and Mark.
Well, what's the answer, Race? Who tried to do away with me?
Well, we're getting close.
The coroner?
Only part of a setup. I know now why Becker and Carson and probably quite a few others are wandering around loose.
They were paroled.
Yes, but they shouldn't have been. Not if the parole board had been given the full facts.
But who could hide the facts?
Only one person. The secretary who prepared the reports. And when they were released, that secretary happened to be the coroner's wife, Margaret Gregory.
Well, that ties it up, doesn't it, Race?
All but the digitalis. But I think that I know where that comes from.
Well, it must have come from someplace. They got gallons of it.
There was a third man in that holdup with Becker and Carson. A man named Otto Rodman.
Yes, but Rodman was never paroled. It was his third offense, and he got a stiff sentence. He has another 10 years to serve on a 15-year rap.
Yes, but he's behaved himself very well for the past 5 years. He's a trustee at the prison.
Yeah, so what's that got to do with a
digitalis, Mark?
That's what I said.
I think Rodman supplies it. Because for the past 14 months as a trustee, he's been assigned to the prison hospital.
Yeah, that's rough, Race. Things get around quick on a prison grapevine. If we went in to investigate, he'd know it before we got to him.
Well, not the way we're going to do it, Fred. I'm going to set it up with the state's attorney. Mark and I are going into that state prison as a pair of convicted hijackers.
All right, now, which two go to the infirmary?
We do.
Get in there. Here are two guys for sick call, Rodman. Probably faking. I'll see him on the way back after the doctor gets in.
Okay, Mr. Seward.
What are you guys in for?
The cops say we hijacked a truck.
Yeah, but of course you didn't.
Of course not.
Yeah. Ain't it a shame the way we innocent guys keep getting thrown in here for nothing?
It was a frame-up. Yeah. What are you in for?
I borrowed some money and forgot to give it back. You guys really sick or just stolen?
Yeah, my heart's been giving me a little trouble. I guess being in this place brings on heart attacks.
Nah, you get used to it. We ain't had more than 4 hot cases in a year I've been on this job.
How do you get an assignment like this?
Keeping my nose clean.
Is this better than the other spots?
Yeah, grub's better. Few special privileges. Private room visitors 3 days a week.
So work hard?
Nah. Guy's got to be pretty sick before they let him stay in here. Mostly it's the clerk's job. Keeping records, ordering supplies. Mm. Those books are right there beside.
That looks pretty simple. Aspirin, bandages, codeine, and digitalis. Quite a lot of digitalis. Large order every month, yet you've only had 4 hot cases in more than a year.
Well, the stuff spoils the stamp here. You got to make sure it's fresh. Besides, you better put that book down before the doc gets here. Get over and sit on that bench.
Rodman, you've been slipping that digitalis out of here 100 grains a month. To Becker and Carson.
You're crazy. You're nuts, both of you.
Watch him, Race.
What are you, a couple of stool pigeons?
Rodman, you're an accessory to more than 20 murders, and you'll die for it unless you get smart.
Die? Well, I...
Put on that scalpel, Rodman.
Put it in here.
Look out, Race.
Stay back, Mark. This thing is sharper than a razor.
Can you take it? I'll kill you.
Drop it. You lose, Rodman. There's an electric chair in this setup someplace. Who's going to sit in it? You, or Becker, and Carson, and the Gregorys?
All right, I'll talk.
Save it. I'd like the warden and a couple other people to hear it. Open up, guard!
Hey, you know something, Ray? I'll bet we're serving a shorter sentence anybody ever served here.
Well, Race, can you think of any reason why we should pay your fee after treating you to such a fine vacation?
A vacation? Are you kidding? I almost become a Corpus Delicious.
Oh. Mark Latin and you do not make a team. Friends, Jerry.
I certainly am. What a ring. The coroner and his wife and daughter and a pair of cutthroats.
Hey, you know something, Rice? That rain dame wasn't bad looking. I don't think she was so bad. Maybe her family just roped her into it, huh?
She working on your heart for the second time?
What do you mean the second time?
Who do you think poured that stuff into your drinking water?
You mean she did it? Why, that two-time and no good dame.
That would have gone on if you hadn't stopped it, Race. You've saved the company a lot of money.
I wanted to talk to you about that, Fred. You never paid Becker for the death of Richard Dodge, did you?
No, and we won't have to now.
Well, those premiums were paid by Dodge's mother, Fred. Sweet old lady. She's the real victim of this.
Oh, I see what you're driving at, Race. I think I can arrange to have the claim paid to her.
Ah, thanks, Fred. You're a decent guy.
Adventures of Frank Race, starring Tom Collins with Tony Barrett as Mark Donovan, comes to you from Hollywood. Others heard in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Michael Ann Barrett, Jack Crucian, Ted Ponelts, and Wilms Herbert. This series is written and directed by Buckley Angel and Joel Murcott. The music is composed and played by Ivan Dittmars. Be sure to be with us again this same time next week for another dramatic chapter in The Adventures of Frank Race. Art Gilmore speaking. This is a Bruce Ells production.
Of science, a man whose erudition and integrity have never been questioned, tells us of an experience that fits into the category of the unexplained, it is difficult to question it. Dr. Hilprecht was such a scientist, and his is the remarkable story of a man who journeyed into the past.
Dr. Hermann Hilprecht is known to students of antique culture throughout the world. His book, Old Babylonian Inscriptions, is held in high repute. This is the book on which he was laboring that night in the spring of 1893, when the strange, the incredible thing happened. It was well past midnight, and he had been sitting in his study for several hours, puzzling over two simple sketches that lay on his desk. At length, the door opened, and his wife entered the room, inquiring gently.
Had you not better stop now, dear? It's getting very late.
Please, my dear. I cannot stop until I've solved these two problems. A half hour passed, and then an hour. And still he sat brooding at his desk. Then, once again, the door opened behind him, and footsteps approached his chair. Dr. Hilprecht turned angrily.
My dear, I thought you were asleep by now. Won't you please?
Oh. The doctor's voice trailed off into silence. For it was not his wife who stood looking over his shoulder. It was a priest of the ancient Temple of Bel.
I will help you. Come with me.
Suddenly, a silvery mist seemed to cover everything. And gradually, the walls of the office dissolved into it. The doctor, moving as if in a great void,
followed the weird white figure until the two stood at last in a great room.
Fair Kimrai, you are at Nepal, in the treasure chamber of the Temple of Bel. It was here that I received the command from a mighty king to make for the statue of the god Lurin a pair of agate earrings.
And the inscription on them?
To the god Ninib, son of Bel, his lord Pericalso, pontifex of Bel, has presented this.
Dr. Hilprecht found himself once again in his own study, seated before his desk. For a moment, he thought he had dreamed. But then suddenly a hand fell on his shoulder. He turned to find the priest of the Temple of Bel still standing above him.
There, on the page that lies open before you, the name of Nebuchadnezzar. It is wrong. It means, Nebo, protect my boundary.
Why, yes, that's it. Boundary.
But Dr. Hilprecht's gratitude fell on the empty air, for the priest of Bel had vanished. Yes, this is the amazing story told by a man of science. From any source less reputable than this, it would be a story that might be readily brushed aside. And even now, its authenticity might well be doubted, were it not for the fact that Dr. Hilprecht's translation of the inscription on the agate and his interpretation of the meaning of Nebuchadnezzar's name have stood the test of time and further research. And this is a fact, incredible but true.
National Broadcasting Company invites you by transcription to join The Chase. There is always the hunter and the hunted, the pursuer and the pursued. It may be the voice of authority or a race with death and destruction, the most relentless of the hunters. There are times when laughter is heard as counterpoint and moments when sheer terror is the theme. But always there is the chase. And no one joins the chase with more determination than the fortune hunter.
You see this item right here in the obituary column, friend? It's only 5 lines wide. There's a story behind it that you could stick between the covers of a book. The story starts with a guy named Keith Claiborne, whose real handle was plain old Artie Snide. He grew up tall, dark, and handsome, with a smile like a toothpaste ad and only one ambition, to marry $1 million. He didn't care who she was or what she was, as long as she had the mazuma. And while he waited for a wealthy widow to chase, he polished up his manners until his style was smooth as silk. And just as creepy as the worms that make it. His big chance came on a plane bound from Chicago to New York, where Artie found himself sitting beside something fair, fat, and pushing 50, but rolling in mink. One glance at the rocks on her fingers had Artie drooling like a horse. The first thing you know, he'd turned on the charm. Molars, mustache, and all.
I beg your pardon.
Yes?
Would you mind very much if I smoked?
Oh, I know, of course not.
Thank you. I hope you don't think I'm being rude or inquisitive, but I'd greatly appreciate it if you'd autograph this envelope for me.
You want my autograph?
Yes, Miss Ellington.
My name isn't Ellington.
It isn't.
Oh, I know.
Oh, I thought you were Dorothy Ellington, the moving picture star.
You did?
You look so much alike.
Oh, no one's ever told me that before.
It happens to be true.
Well...
Oh, please forgive me. I realize we're total strangers, but I just couldn't help...
Oh, don't apologize. It's quite all right.
is it?
Why, of course.
My name's Keith Claiborne. The Chicago Claibornes.
I'm Eloise McKendall.
Miss McKendall?
Mrs.
Oh.
I'm a widow, you see.
A widow? A widow at your age?
Well...
You poor, poor child. Please accept my condolences.
You needn't feel so sorry for me. My late husband, George McKendall, died some years ago. I've gotten over it.
Did you say George McKendall?
Yes.
The copper magnate?
Did you know him?
I believe he was a close associate of my brother's. The Claibornes are steel.
Why, how interesting.
This is an amazing coincidence. Why, we're practically old friends.
Yes, we are, aren't we?
You're going to New York, I take it?
For a visit. My home is in Montana.
Well, then you must let me show you around.
Oh, no, I couldn't impose.
Impose? I never consider it an imposition to put myself out for a beautiful woman.
Why, Mr. Claiborne...
Please call me Keith. If you want to see the real New York, I'll show you places.
Artie's family was in steel, all right. His father was a riveter. But lying was part of Artie's stock in trade. And he was second to nobody when it came to cooking up a yarn. Well, for the next 2 weeks, he gave Mrs. McKendall a whirl. He put himself into hock to get the dough to show her around. Artie had nickels instead of red blood corpuscles and a cash register for a heart. But it didn't show when he dolled up in his white tie and tails and became the handsomest heel in town.
Oh, you dance divinely, Keith.
Only because I have an angel in my arms.
Oh, how you do carry on.
I've never been so happy in my life, Eloise.
Neither have I. It's too bad it has to end.
End?
Yes.
Come on, Eloise. Let's sit down.
Well, all right.
Now, what's this all about? Our friendship ending?
Well, I'm going home, Keith.
Oh, no.
But I must.
Why aren't you happy here?
Oh, of course I'm happy. I've never been so happy in my life. But I can't stay on forever. I have my friends back home and the house.
The house?
Oh, it's so big, Keith, and it worries me. I don't see why I live in a 27-room mansion at all. I guess I do it because I'm sentimental. The house was George's favorite place for so long.
27. Mm. Eloise, you can't leave me.
But I have to go home sometime.
Do you want to ruin my life, my darling?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry, that just slipped out. But that's how I feel.
Oh, Keith, please. We've only known each other 2 weeks, and you act as if we...
I can't help myself, Eloise. You're ravishing. My life had been meaningless before I met you. The same old round, the same old pursuit of financial gain on Wall Street. I have everything I need now, all the money in the world. Yes, I have everything. But real happiness, Eloise.
Oh, you poor boy.
You say that like you mean it.
I do. But don't worry. You're bound to find some sweet young girl a lot nearer your age.
A lot nearer my age? Well, you're just a child yourself, Eloise. Oh,
I'm a lot older than you think.
What has age to do with romance?
Oh, gee.
Don't turn away from me, my sweet. But just one kiss, just...
No, not here, not... Well...
I beg your pardon. My emotions carried me away.
Keith, take me home, please. At once.
Just as you say, dear Eloise.
He ran into a snag at that point, all right, friend. He didn't think the old girl would be so coy. But that didn't stop my boy for long. When you hunt for an easy fortune, you gotta have a bag of tricks. And Artie had a million.
Goodbye, Keith.
When that plane leaves the ground, my darling, it carries my life along with it.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't hold my hand that way. People may be watching.
Goodbye, Eloise. Remember, I'll be thinking of you always. And when you think of me, I only hope you'll shed a little tear for the joy we've known together.
Oh, Keith.
Stayed on the ground as her plane took off, but he didn't stop the chase for a second. First, he wired the airport at Chicago.
I'm miserable. Come back and let me live again for just a little.
Kansas City.
You can't do this to me, Eloise. I'll kill myself, I swear it.
And all points west.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
That finally broke her down, and he got himself an answer.
Well, you can visit me if you like. I'll reserve a room for you at the local hotel, but you must promise to behave.
One hour later, he was heading west on a super constellation. The old campaigner marching back to the wars.
Eloise. Oh, Eloise, I've missed you so.
Oh, now, Keith, you promised to behave.
And I'll keep my promise. Oh, you're so good to me, Eloise.
Oh, how you carry on. Your friends on Wall Street would be amazed.
Yes, they would be. But they wouldn't laugh. They wouldn't dare. I could wipe out half of them with one snap of my fingers.
Are you really that much of a financial power, Keith?
The Claibornes have always been wizards when it comes to money. That's why they've always been unlucky in love.
Well, I'm having a party tomorrow at my home. It's going to be a quiet affair, just 20 or 30 people, my closest friends. I want them to meet you.
Will any of your relatives be present?
Oh, I have no relatives, Keith.
Oh, no?
No. Why do you look so pleased when I say that?
It's just that I want you all to myself.
Oh, Keith, dear.
Eloise, will you consider me a suitor for your hand?
Oh, my goodness. We hardly know each other.
I feel I've known you for years, my darling, and I can make you happy. Let me take you away from all this on a cruise to South America.
Oh, dear, I don't think all this is very wise.
You've got to listen to me. You're alone in this world, and so am I.
But Keith!
Don't give me your answer now. Tomorrow night at the party. But I promise you, if your answer is disappointing, I don't care what will happen to me.
Oh, you really love me that much, Keith?
That much, and more. Until tomorrow night, I'll be waiting. And I know you'll make me the luckiest man alive. When you give me your answer and your love.
Obvious? Sure. Sickening? And how? Only Eloise wasn't sickened. Artie was getting to first base fast, and he was calling up his sluggers for the final inning. By 9 the next night, Eloise's 27-room bungalow was full of people. But Artie was conspicuous by his absence. In the first place, he wasn't taking any chances that somebody at the party might spot him for the fraud that he was. And in the second place, he was getting ready to play his trump card.
Another martini, John? Please, help yourself. We won't be serving dinner for 20 minutes. I'm waiting for another guest. Oh, that's the telephone. Please excuse me for a moment. Hello?
Eloise?
Yes.
This is Keith.
What's happened, Keith? Why aren't you here?
I I couldn't face it, Eloise.
You couldn't face what?
Your refusal.
But
I'm in my hotel room, darling. I just called to say goodbye.
Goodbye?
We'll never see each other again, my sweet.
Oh, Keith, what are you saying? What have you done?
Goodbye, my darling. And remember, I loved you to the last.
Keith! Oh, Keith!
She raced over to his hotel room like an ambulance driver, while Artie set the stage. And when she got there, she found him draped over the sofa with an empty pill bottle in his hand. The pills were only saccharin tablets. Artie liked to watch his figure. But Eloise thought he had taken arsenic.
Oh, how could you, Keith? How could you?
Love does strange things to a man, Eloise.
Oh, you must let me get a doctor.
Oh, no. I'll be all right.
Oh, but...
Just stay here, like this, with your arm around my shoulder, and promise me something.
Oh, anything. Anything at all, my poor boy.
Say that you'll marry me as soon as I'm back on my feet.
Oh, yes, gladly, Keith. Oh, gladly. I would have said yes to you long ago if it hadn't been...
Don't talk anymore. You've made me very happy. We'll take out a license in the morning, Eloise. And be married as soon as we can.
Oh, yes, Keith. Yes.
Eloise, I'll never forget this day as long as I live.
The ceremony was brief, and the happy couple spent their honeymoon in Palm Springs. As a wedding present to himself, Artie bought 18 suits, 20 pair of shoes, and charged them all to his wife's estate. He followed this up with a snappy convertible. But his past caught up with him a few days after the bride and groom came home.
Good morning, Pet.
Oh, good morning, Keith. Sit down and have some breakfast.
You know, we ought to serve this English style. Kippers on the sideboard and so on. The elite should live in elite fashion, don't you think?
This mail is yours, Keith.
For the mail? Oh, yeah. What's this, some bills?
I think so.
Oh, but there's been a mistake. I had these items charged.
Charged?
To your account. What? I'm a bit far from home at the moment, dear, and a little short of cash, so I thought you'd take care of it temporarily.
Oh, but I can't, darling.
I beg your pardon?
Well, I said I can't.
You can't what?
Pay these bills.
What are you talking about?
Oh, well, dear, I don't have any money.
You're joking, of course.
Oh, no, I'm not joking at all.
But your late husband.
Oh, George. Oh, when he died, he was bankrupt.
He was what?
Oh, don't jump like that, Keith, darling. You'll spill coffee on your necktie.
Never mind my necktie. What's all this hogwash about bankruptcy?
Oh, I suppose I should have told you before, but you never asked me about money, and besides, I knew you were so rich.
Never mind me. What about George McKendall?
The copper vein petered out some time before George died. Oh, his partners warned him, but he kept pouring more and more into the mine, and finally he lost it all.
Then I've been swindled.
What?
I've been married under false pretenses.
You married me for my money?
You don't have any money.
Keith, all I have is the house.
What? This house?
Yes.
You own it free and clear?
Well, yes, but...
Darling, you must forgive me.
Well, I can't understand your attitude, Keith.
It wasn't your money I was interested in. After all, I have so much of my own, but for a moment I thought my beloved had deceived me, that she had married me for my money.
But I don't understand...
The house is proof enough, my sweet, that your story was authentic. After all, to own a home like this one, so big and so expensive...
But how could you have doubted me, Keith?
I don't know, Eloise. I must have been insane. It's my conception of you as being perfect that appeared to have been momentarily spoiled.
Oh.
Please, let's forget the whole thing ever happened. We'll call it our first lover's quarrel, shall we?
Well, whatever you say, dear.
I'll take care of these bills myself, of course. I'll wire my New York representatives to... Oh, great Scott.
What's the trouble, darling?
I almost forgot the merger completely.
Merger? What merger?
American Concentrated Incorporated is merging with United States BB&C, my dear. It's to be the biggest deal since 1885.
Oh?
I've been offered a chance to buy in. I wired my partners to do so.
You did?
Every dollar I own is tied up because of it. Oh? I won't be able to put my hands on any ready cash for months.
But what will we live on?
Well, my beloved, what did you live on before we were married?
Well, there was George's insurance. But that's all gone now. My jewels aren't real, so I couldn't sell those.
I see. What would you say this house is worth, Eloise?
Oh, it cost George $500,000 to build. But the houses this size have lost their market value, or so I've been told. The only offer I ever received came about a month ago from a man in Los Angeles. He wanted to convert it into a small hotel.
How much did he offer?
Oh, $167,000.
Really?
But I'd never sell.
What do you mean you'd never sell?
Oh, I really couldn't.
Oh, I see.
What's the trouble, Keith?
Oh, nothing at all.
But you look so unhappy.
Do I?
Oh, darling, have I said something to offend you?
It's just that you don't trust me, Eloise.
Don't trust you?
I'm in a spot now financially, as I told you, yet you refuse to lift a hand to make things easier.
Well, if I had any money, I'd give it to you, darling.
Would you sell the house?
But I can't, Keith.
You can't?
No, I'd have sold the house a long time ago if I could. Heaven knows it's much too big for me.
Then what prevented you?
My husband.
But he's dead.
Oh, he specified in his will that the house must never be sold or the money goes to charity. George wanted me to live in it always.
Well, that's the most selfish gesture I've ever heard of in my life.
Oh, don't be angry, Keith.
You've got to live here until this house rots or it burns down over your head. Suppose it did.
Suppose it did what?
Burned right to the ground. Is it insured?
Oh, naturally.
For its full value?
Just about.
If the place was destroyed, Eloise, would you lose the insurance money, too?
Oh, no, no. But that's impossible.
What is?
This house burning down. It's built so solidly. And George installed a lot of fireproof gadgets when he built it.
Such as what?
Oh, the entire basement and all the servants' quarters have sprinkler systems, for one thing.
What else?
Oh, the rugs and the drapes have been treated. Oh, it would take a lot to burn this mansion to the ground, Keith.
Would it?
Mm-hmm. Why are you so interested?
Only for your sake, dearest. I want to make sure that you're always protected against harm.
Oh, you're so thoughtful, Keith.
Where is the fire insurance policy?
In the library safe.
We'd better get it out.
Why, whatever for?
It's not a good idea to keep it here. I'll put it in the bank. We can't be too careful, can we?
Only a dizzy dame with an open heart and a mind like a vacuum tube couldn't see through Artie Snide. Eloise was just that kind of a dish. While she sat around like a lovesick kitten, Artie was making plans. And one of those plans included a visit to a gin mill on San Francisco's waterfront and a certain leech-faced character who had been recommended by a mutual friend.
Is your name Fingers?
Why?
I'm Keith Claiborne.
So what?
I'm also known as Artie Snide.
Again, so what?
I'm a friend of Dipper Crowley in New York.
You know the Dip?
Intimately. He told me where to find you. Here's a letter he sent me, more or less of an introduction.
Uh-huh. That letter's okay, so you're okay. What can I do for you, Zaddy?
I understand you're a specialist.
Could be.
At arson.
I started a couple of bonfires in my time.
I've got another one for you to kindle.
Where?
In Montana.
What's in it for you?
Insurance.
And me?
$10,000 in cash.
What kind of setup is it?
27 rooms, no neighbors within half a mile. I'd have done the job myself, but I've heard these insurance inspectors are too smart.
Not for me. How's the joint built?
I brought a picture.
Let me see.
Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sprinkler system in the cellar and in the servants' quarters.
Sprinkler systems are my meat.
And the drapes and carpets are treated.
I've never seen a treatment yet for phosphorus.
Phosphorus? Is that what you use?
One of my gadgets. The joint is wood from the first floor up, right?
That's right. With a stone base.
When do you want it done?
As soon as possible.
Well, I got an auto job on for Wednesday. A bond gimmick for Thursday night. How's a Saturday?
Saturday's fine.
The house has got to be empty. I don't mix my trade with homicide. Catch?
Naturally, it will be empty. I'll take my wife out while you're at work.
You got a key?
Here you are.
How about the help?
We haven't hired any help since our return. The place will be deserted when you get there.
Check. That's all. Except, I want a G-note on account.
But $1,000?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have it right now. But I'll have all your money for you when I collect the insurance.
You better have, mister. Because I can specialize in double crosses, too. If you don't want to look like a candle on a windy night, you'll pay up on time.
Don't worry about it. Then I'll expect you on Saturday night.
We got a date.
The following Saturday, Artie took his bride to a movie. And there was a glow in the sky as they walked homeward after the show. The fire was a dilly. As the engines roared up and the firemen went to work, there was another and warmer glow in Artie Snide's larcenous heart.
Get the fire on the right, now. Get that hose
going. Oh, Keith, it's awful.
There goes the second story.
Oh, but how could it have happened? Everything was fine when we left the house tonight.
Accidents will occur, Eloise, my sweet.
Are you sure it was an accident?
What do you mean?
Well, don't you think some vandal may have started it? Some dipsomaniac, maybe?
Oh, you mean pyromaniac, darling, and well, I doubt if that's possible. It was probably spontaneous combustion that did it.
Oh.
Oh, what?
I
took the precaution of removing that fire insurance policy to a safe place, Eloise. Wasn't that clever of me?
Oh, yes, very dear.
We ought to be able to collect on the policy within 2 weeks, just as soon as their inspectors check the incident.
Oh, Keith, someone's coming over here.
Oh, where?
See him? He's walking our way.
Oh, it's a policeman.
Are you Mr. Claiborne?
Yes, sir.
The owner of this house?
That's right.
You better come with me.
Oh, what for?
You're under arrest, Mr. Claiborne.
Under arrest?
On suspicion of arson and a possible involvement in a charge of homicide.
Arson? What does he mean, Keith?
There was a firebug trapped inside your house. A man named Fingers was wanted in 7 states. Oh. He was badly burned and he probably won't live, but he's made a statement. You want to know what he said, Claiborne?
Keith.
Never mind the details. I think I have a pretty good idea.
Oh, but...
Don't worry about it, Eloise. It doesn't mean a thing. I'll get myself a lawyer, and I'll be free inside of 24 hours. Wait for me, Eloise. I'll be back.
That was 8 years ago, friend. And 8 years is a long, long time. Eloise waited as long as she could. And then she got pneumonia one winter afternoon, quietly passed away. That's what reminded me of this story, friend. It's Eloise Claiborne's obituary I spotted just now in this newspaper. How do I know so much about Eloise and her fortune-hunting hubby? Well, you see, my name is Harry Snide, and I'm Artie's cousin. But there's a topper to this story, friend, something that Artie probably just found out. Eloise had a $500,000 life insurance policy, and Artie was beneficiary. Happy? Sure, Artie's happy. They gave him 30 years on the arson rap, an extra 20 for contributing to Finger's death. But why shouldn't he be happy? He's got his fortune at last. He'll be the richest man in the state penitentiary for the rest of his life.
In the animal world, there is the hunter and the hunted. Hound and fox, hawk and sparrow, cat and mouse. We in the topmost species have also joined the hunt. But who is to judge precisely which of us are hounds or foxes as we enter the chase? The Chase was created and written for the National Broadcasting Company by Lawrence Klee. Featured in the cast were David Gothard, Arlene Blackburn, and Ralph Bell. The Chase is directed and transcribed by Fred Way. Fred Collins speaking. Next week, the story of a man with a dual personality. Two people living in one and each fighting for control during the Chase.
Tonight, it's Adventure with Counter Spy and Dragnet on NBC.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed our shows. If not, come back next week. We'll try again with some Box 13 and an episode from the Seal Test Variety Theater. In the meantime, there's more old-time radio at RelicRadio.com. All the shows are listed there, and all the links to everything else Relic Radio are listed there as well. Links to our Facebook page, forum, Shoutcast stream, newsletter, sign up, ways to donate. It's all at RelicRadio.com. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next week with another 60 minutes of old-time radio on the Relic Radio Show.